So, as we begin, I've never preached on Psalm 11. So this is a new psalm to me, although I probably read it in Bible college, seminary. I just never felt compelled to preach it. It's to the choir master of King David. What's clear is David's life is in danger. And as such, it is a psalm of trust. One of the key verses is verse 3. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? That's a good question. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The psalm itself doesn't give a direct answer, although I'm going to depart from what some of the commentaries are saying here. The whole psalm itself is a response to that question. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Rolf Jacobson, in his commentary, writes this: the psalm is itself a radical and countercultural expression of trust in the face of chaos. And in this sense, the psalm then is the very answer to the question it reports. When we look at our world today, we see chaos in the streets. We see morality gone sideways. We see lawlessness, and we see financial decline. So the question for us is, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Now, right up front, King David talks about trusting in the Lord. And I like what it seems like, Angie, you pick up my hint, my theme of the sermon. You just, it's all God, right? King David writes this in verse 1. In the Lord I take refuge. Now, I think this is one of the central focus points in answering that question, although 4, 5, 6, and 7 will continue this thought. But King David now says, in the Lord I take refuge. That is a huge statement. The New Century Version says it this way: I trust in the Lord for protection. And I think this is a good understanding. In the Lord, Yodehavev Adonai, which is the one true God. So King David saying, in that God, not the gods of this world, not what I see going on around me, but that God, I will take refuge. Hasa, which means I take refuge is one word in Hebrew. And it refers to safety, rest, or comfort. And it implies a place that is completely safe. Now that begs the question, what was King David talking about here? I take refuge in the Lord. Some scholars believe that this was a reference to King David finding refuge in the temple in Jerusalem. However, verse 4, if we look at verse 4 for a second, we see this: the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. I don't think King David ran to Jerusalem to hide from his enemies. I think King David is saying this: no matter where I am in life, whether it's here, whether it's here, whether it's here, the overarching theme of my life will be trust in Yahweh, trust in the God of heaven, trust in the one who knows where I am in my life, and he will watch over me. So those moments in life, I know that we all like a place of safety and a place of trust. Could be anywhere, folks. Anywhere in your life, not in here. I know there's been through centuries people have taken sanctuary in churches. But this is on the highways and byways of life. King David, I don't think he was in Jerusalem. I think he was on the run here. And the enemies of God and of King David were after him. And I find it hard to believe that King David would have run to Jerusalem, particularly in light of what he said in verse 4. So, Psalm of Trust. What is a Psalm of Trust? And they're throughout the Psalms. First of all, Psalm 23, we looked at that last time. Though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil. How about this one? Psalm 27, if the enemy encamps against me, if the battle rises against me, that's in Psalm 27. Psalm 46, when the earth changes itself, when the mountains quake and the heart of the seas. In Psalms of trust, and if you go through and you read the Psalms, in Psalms of trust, there is always an element of danger. So when we think about the stuff that we go through in our lives, and we think about God, and we think about the situations that we get confronted with, the response is not fear. The response is trust. Okay, God, you know where I am right now in my life, and you see all this going on around me, but I'm going to trust. I'm going to put my trust in you. I'm going to find that place of safety and rest, not in what man has, but in what you have. And so, King David, right up front, before we start unfolding this marvelous psalm, he's saying right up front, I trust in Yahweh. He is my comfort. He is my strength. He is my rest. He is my safety. Years ago, and actually I looked this up, Ultifocus lens. I was in Korea, we had this exercise. Back then I had a top secret clearance because I was with the 125th Military Intelligence Battalion, and that's a fancy way of saying there wasn't much intelligence. But anyway, I found myself in a tunnel, a massive tunnel. This is that tunnel. It is massive, I'm telling you. I've seen it. There's beds on the walls that come down, and it is so hard to get in there. We were metal detected when we came in, and you just got the sense that, wow, this place is protected. And I remember the president, I can't remember the name of the president of South Korea, came through, but the day before we're in there, and I'm actually in the nerve center where all the generals were coming in, and we were doing exercises, and I don't feel like I can tell you what it was, but needless to say, when the South Korean president came to visit, they had bomb sweepers come through. That's why I was paid hazardous duty pay, because one of those bombs goes off, somebody gets in there, be a mess. When the South Korean president came through, they told us to put our hands on the desk and turn away from him. And I'll never forget my friend that was with me. He was a sergeant too. He goes, I'm not doing that. When the South Korean president, I don't have to do that for my president. And I noticed that when the South Korean president came through, he went like this. So it was definitely a place of safety. You could not get in there. In fact, when we left the hotel, they blacked out the curtains so that we couldn't see. And we were trying to figure it out because we were there for 2 or 3 weeks. And we were trying to gauge how far it was, but they would stagger the ride. So one time it took 50 minutes, one time it took 30, one time. So we couldn't really pin down where it was. But it was a place of safety. You could not get in there. And listen, when we trust in God, it is a place of safety. We are surrounded by Him. We are protected by Him. Nothing can happen to you that God does not allow. And therefore, King David says, I see the enemies. The enemies are encamped around me. I know that they're after me. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm going to trust God. And that's a place that we have to get to. We have to get to that place, and I know there's times you get scared, me too, and there's times that we worry about things. Think about King David, they're after him. This isn't metaphorical, this is real. They're wanting to kill King David before he takes the throne. Psalm 27 says this, I love this verse, and I love the picture too. For he will hide me in the shelter of the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will lift me up on a high rock. I love that verse. That's something you need to read this week over and over and over again. If you're going through difficulties and hardships right now, read that. memorize it. And when those difficulties come and when those hardships come, you can trust. And you know, some trust in chariots. That was a great song. We actually do not talk before. I just give her the verses. But some trust in financial security. Some trust in relationships. Some trust in their work. Some trust in activity. Some trust in retirement nest eggs. But that's not where our trust should be. That is not where our faith should be. Our faith and our trust is in Him. And I get it. Sometimes it is challenged a lot. Now, here's an interesting one in verse 1b. And verse 1b, we'll look at the counsel now. How can you say to my soul, flee like a bird to your mountain? What? Okay, so let me give you three possible explanations, and I think I'll tell you what I think it means. First of all, David could be talking to himself. How can you say to your soul, flee to the mountains? Or it could be the enemies are telling King David to his soul, flee to the mountains because we will kill you. I don't think either one of those are right. You know what I think it is? I think David is being counseled by those who like him to flee. And King David is responding, how can you say that to me? I just got through saying I'm trusting in the Lord, and you're telling me in counsel that you want me to flee like a bird to your mountain. The word here for soul is nephesh. We've seen this word many times before. It's the seat of emotions, the feeling, the hearts, the desire, the will. So King David is taking this inwardly, and he's saying, how can you guys tell me to flee in the midst of danger? Didn't I just tell you that I trust in the Lord? Now, this is a metaphor, obviously. This is a metaphor. Flee like a bird to the mountains. Borrowing from Proverbs 27:8. Like a bird that strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home. If David were to flee, he would be homeless. David's not going to do that. How about Psalm 102, verse 7? I watch and become like a sparrow that is alone on the housetop. So if David leaves and he flees the trouble that is in front of him, he would have abandoned his statement saying, I trust in the Lord. I trust in the Lord, but God, I've got to leave. And I've got to find a place of safety because you're not providing it. King David says, how can you say to me, how can you possibly suggest that I would flee from the enemies of God, and I'm just not going to do that? Listen, let me say this. It's good to have friends. But let me say this. Friends sometimes do not give good advice. 1995, I had graduated Bible college, went to seminary, and the first semester I was in there, and I go, I already know this stuff that they're telling me. So the church that I was attending, it was a big church, and I made time to talk with the pastor, and he said, Michael, you do not need further education. So I found a church in Ohio. Oh my gosh, please give me a do-over. It was a mess, and I should have stayed. It's the one time, and I thought about that this week, and I said, he gave me such bad advice. And sometimes, yes, friends can be good, and friends can give good advice. But listen, the issue here is, and I'm going to talk about friendships, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend can sharpen a friend. That is true. Sometimes, particularly with godly friends, and I've got some of those, and I talk with them from time to time, sometimes that will sharpen you and me when they talk to us about whether it's spiritual things, about life in general. But Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. When you have a decision to make, or you need some guidance, you go to him first. I'm not saying to abandon your friends, don't ask them what they think, but ultimately the decision should be between you and God. And God, I believe in my heart, God will give you the wisdom that you need in this life to navigate life. In fact, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, you all know this, you know these verses. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not unto your own understanding. Don't flee, David, stay. God's got this. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. That's another verse you need to write down and memorize. Not only the trust verse, but also this verse. I don't want to put your friends down, but sometimes your friends don't know what God has for your life. They can be helpful at times, I get that, but ultimately we need to go to him first. Talk to him, just like we did this morning, but when I got down here and prayed, just talk to him and say, look, Lord, I've got this. I need some direction. I need some guidance. What do you want me to do? And sometimes when we do that, then we talk to our friends. Maybe God will confirm that through a friend by saying, I think you should do this. And certainly you should, if you have a decision to make, you should talk to the deacons in our church. You can come see me. I'll be glad to help. But ultimately, one of the first things I'm going to ask is, have you talked to God first? So the council said, hey, David, you see the enemies around you, you need to flee. You need to get out of here. And King David says, my trust is in the Lord. In a sense, wasn't very good counsel. So we trust in the Lord, and then we don't waver. I found out this week there's many different spellings of waver. So I had to go back and make sure I had the right one. For behold, the wicked, Rasha, the unrighteous, pertaining to being evil, people who don't know God, people who are enemies of God, people who would love nothing more than to see us fail. I have a lot of lost friends, actually. And they're good people. Matter of fact, I was out at the Dome last night. Our Champaign-Urbana Astronomical Society asked me and Dwayne to run the Big Dome telescope. Normally it takes three. I looked at Dwayne. I said, do you think we can pull this off? And because I think we can. So you have to hold, it's got a probably about this distance, and you have to hold that telescope when you disengage it. You have to hold it, and then there's a little, looks like a pre-World War II device where you have to move it, and you're looking for the declinations to be 0-0 when you're trying to find a target. And then when I found it, and he saw it, he's on way up here, he's looking through the telrad, and he goes, I think that's it. And I go, engage it. And then you can let go, because if you let go and it's not engaged, uh-oh. Pastor Mike would be kicked out of the society and banned for life. Saturn was that big last night in the big telescope. Several people climbed up the ladder to see it, and they go, wow! And I looked at one guy, and I said, that's what we call the wow factor. The guy I was with last night was very good. Nice guy. Doesn't know Jesus, but I've been praying about this. And you know what he said last night? I've been praying since we got this app, and I've been praying for some of these people that that I'm friends with, he said something last night. He said something, I didn't quite catch it, but he said, because I know the profession you're in. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. God's working on him. So I think I was supposed to be there just for him, if nothing else. And then there's really a whole procedure to that thing. You've got to lift this up. Then it took us 30 minutes to actually get it set up. We're talking the whole time. You won't believe how hot it is inside that dome. For somebody that's, you know, I don't get hot very easily. I said, Dwayne, it's stable. I got to go outside for a minute and get some air because it's so hot. Nice guy. Doesn't know Jesus. And then there are people who are absolutely wicked. And you know what? They don't know Jesus. That's why we have the light of the gospel. And it should not shock us. It should not shock us when we say something about Jesus and they push back hard. Jesus said this, if the world hates you, remember it hated me first. The world would love you as one of its own if you belong to it, but you are no longer part of the world. Fact. Because when we trust in Jesus Christ, we have been set free from the dominion of darkness and transferred into the kingdom of light, and therefore we are separate. So Jesus said, I chose you out of the world, so it hates you. Now, you may not always get a real negative response. You may not get pushback like I did from one lady. That was creepy. She leaned over the table, looked at me and said, don't mention the name Jesus. I said, okay. So I went back and talked with one of my church members, and I said, this is what your mom said to me. And it was a very short time after that, she put a sack around her head and suffocated herself. I pray to God she got saved. But when she leaned over and looked at me, her eyes were full of anger. And I told her, I will not mention it. I will not mention it. For behold, the wicked bend the bow. They have fitted their arrow to the string. You know what's happening here? This is what's happening. They are aiming at the future king of Israel. They want him dead. Psalm doesn't really say why they want him dead, but I can kind of give you a little hint. It's because he trusts in Yod-Heh-Vav. And when you trust in Jesus Christ and you're out in the highways and byways of life and somebody doesn't like what you've got to say, remember the words of Jesus. They hate you because they hate me. And we are connected to the kingdom of light. And what does light do? Light reveals the darkness. Last night, I had to use my flashlight because sometimes we were stumbling on each other. And it's so dark inside there, you really can't see. But when I hit my flashlight, I could see. That's what the kingdom of light does. It pierces the darkness. And people can, and then you can see exactly what is there. And that's what we are as believers. We are the kingdom of light. Now notice this. They bend the bow. They have fitted the arrow into the bow. So you've got something like this, like this. Now listen to this. I think this is a spiritual side here. To shoot in the dark at the upright. Yashal means morally innocent and proper according to a standard. And of course, the standard is God. They shoot in the darkness. They shoot in the dark. Do you know Satan loves the dark? Actually, the Hebrew here makes it shadow. So they're in the shadows, and King David knows this. He's looking around, and I think this part is literal, that they have their arrows focused at him. I keep coming back to this. When we talk about the Old Testament. Micah 6:8, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. In the Old Testament, in the Mishpat, there were 613 laws. It's kind of like a play at second base where the shortstop's kind of on the bag, maybe in the ballpark. 613 laws. They could not live those laws. They didn't live those laws. That's why Jesus came. And Paul says in Galatians, the law was our tutor to lead us to Christ that we might be saved. And we're under that tutor until we trust in Jesus Christ. But they weren't able to keep it. And Micah, I think, really strikes at the heart of, I just keep coming back to this verse recently. To act justly, to do what God requires. You guys and gals know what God requires. You're not to be mean to people. You're not to steal from your boss. You're not to do, you know what it means to do what God requires. To love mercy. Listen, Christians should understand, particularly when we're engaging in a lost world, that these people are lost, and we shouldn't let the temperature of our lives go up. We should love mercy. Give them the benefit of a doubt. And if you get frustrated with somebody that's not saved and they're not trusting in Christ and they're kicking back on you, just take a step back and do not engage in mean activity. Christians get a bad name when it comes to pushing back and you're this and you're that. And love mercy. Look, how many of you in here have received the mercy of Christ? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? Particularly with lost people, just love them. You were shown mercy. I think about all the people in my life up till then. They showed me mercy. They showed me love. They showed me grace. Give grace out. They shoot in the dark at the upright. Humility. This is a big one. I'm sorry, Levi, I'm going in. Humbly. Levi knows there's an imaginary line right here, and I just went behind the screen. But walk humbly. Humility is not weakness. Meekness is not weakness. We got to be careful. And King David is acknowledging that, yeah, David's morally innocent. He's living by the standard according to the scripture here. They shoot in the dark. Not total darkness. It's Ophel, this word shoot in the dark. One word, Ophel. Not in total darkness, but in the shadows. And again, Satan loves to operate in the shadows. He does not like to have something brought to light. He always likes to lurk and work in the shadow. Peter Craigie, in his commentary, writes this: if the psalmist who was innocent of any wrongdoing, upright in heart, stood, he would have little chance of protecting himself against the arrows that are shot in the dark. You see the vulnerability here? He's vulnerable. That's why his friend said, look, you're not always going to be able to see these enemies in the shadows because they're hiding and they're going to get you. So King David, flee to the mountain. Leave. King David says, no, no, no. See, guys, you don't understand something. I trust in God. That is, he would be vulnerable to attacks from dangerous and concealed opponents. Satan likes the darkness. He doesn't like to be exposed. And again, what Jesus said in John 8:12. When Jesus spoke to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. We are the light of the world, folks. We're right. We've trusted in Jesus. And Jesus says, we're the light of the world. We go out into the world and we share the light of the gospel with a world that needs to know him desperately. And as I walk humbly before God, and as I love mercy, and as I do what God requires, people will go, wait a minute, you're different. Somebody wants to get into an argument with you, back away. King David just said, look, guys, I trust in the Lord. I'm not trusting in your worldly wisdom. If that were the case, I would be abandoning God. I'd be like a bird up on a rooftop, all by myself alone. I'm going to keep trusting in God. Okay, the moment you have all been waiting for. This is the moment. The question. This is interesting. I spent probably way too much time on this one. I don't know, I probably spent like 6 hours just on this little verse. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Now, King David has just said, I trust in the Lord. That's one answer. But I think the same people that told David to flee are saying this to King David. David, look. The arrows are aimed against you. David, what can we do? If the foundations are destroyed, this is a little deeper than just this, foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The word foundation is the word shait. And that means the foundation, listen to this, very important, the foundations of society and the basic principles of life. He is saying, look, King David, you've got to flee because our society as Israelites is threatened if you are taken out and you are killed. That's the foundation of society. I went back and I looked at it, I did it three times, and I go, that's words for society. Society would be torn down if King David dies. So David, what can you do? Flee. Let me go back to verse 1. I trust in the Lord. Try to put this in a right way. How did this happen? At the end of World War I, there was a treaty, the Treaty of Versailles, in which the treaty actually made it impossible for Germany. Hitler fought in World War I. He later joined the German Work Party, and within 1 year, in 1919, he became the president, the leader of the German Work Party. And guess what? The German Work Party, through about a 10-year period, becomes the Nazi Party. Who's the leader of that party? It is Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was a great orator. He would speak and speak and speak, and it just seemed to draw a lot of people in. And so Hitler had this audience that was growing. In 1932, this is like 10 years later, Hitler is still working. He is developing the thousand-year Reich. What he's actually doing is he is preparing to tear down societal structures. Like I said, in 1932, he finished second. Now listen to the events here. This is important. January 1933. So this is right after the election. January 1933, one of the dumbest moves ever made. Von Hindenburg, who will die in 1934, but von Hindenburg appoints Hitler chancellor of Germany. That's basically the number two guy. Hitler now sees that. So you have the Treaty of Versailles, you have the Great Depression, which Hitler gave tons of speeches about how the government was bad. And so you have all of this moving towards. I'm going to say this, and I think Hitler was very intelligent. He knew what he was doing. He had a plan. It was an evil plan. It was an evil plan to tear down the society structures. So this was in January 1933. Can you imagine? Von Hindenburg would die in 34. Hitler was diabolical. In February, I'm going to give you the date, February 27th, 1933, the Reichstag fire. So there was communists in Germany. Hitler knew that. Now, most historians believe that this fire was set by the Nazi Party. They burned down their capital, the parliament. Hitler, as chancellor, goes on to say the communists did this. And of course, the Germans are outraged now, because Hitler's a great orator. He knows how to speak. At that event, von Hindenburg makes another mistake. He issues a decree taking away the rights of the people. Hitler is now influencing, and you have this collapse of societal structure. 1934, von Hindenburg dies. Guess who is the ultimate power in Germany? Adolf Hitler. We just watched a three-part series on FDR. If you have not seen that, it's on, I don't normally do this, but it's on Hulu. It's called FDR. It's about 5 hours, and it is excellent. This Hitler then begins pushing all over the place, breaking treaties. What he wants to do is to destroy social structures. At the end of World War II, let me show you a picture of what Berlin looked like. Look at this. It's completely devastated. The structure is gone. It all went back to, I think, the Treaty of Versailles, when they overtaxed the German people, which ultimately gave rise to Adolf Hitler. And of course, it cost us a lot of lives. If the foundations are destroyed, what can we do? Well, let me tell you what I think we can do. I'll try to answer it. We can take refuge in the Lord. We can trust in Him. When we look at our culture today, we see it's fragmented. Pray. That's what the righteous can do. Trust in the Lord, pray, seek God, and just trust in Him. I think that's really good advice for us. Be careful about taking advice. Yes, take it. Pray about it. Don't live in fear. Do not live in fear. King David says, well, wait a minute. You're telling me to flee. The enemies are around me. I get that. But you know what? I'm trusting in God. I'm not going to live in fear. Do not live in fear. Do you know who wants you to live in fear? Satan. We have to trust in Him. God is in control. God is in control. Though the kingdoms fall around us, God is in control. Though we're having all of these problems, God is in control. This is what's going on in my life. I'm going to tell you, God is in control. He has this. Therefore, our response to that, I'm going to trust. I'm just going to trust in God.